Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Shukin here with Todd Embley.
I'm also Ryan Shukin here with Todd Embley.
And that, yeah, okay.
No, I'm Todd Embley and he's Ryan Shukin.
So we actually, once we figure out who we are, we had a great guest today.
We did.
We had William.
We did not have William. There's no William. It's Willie.
We had Willie.
His real name is Wellington Cho.
Yeah, Wellington Cho.
We had Willie Cho, founder and CEO of Neonan.com.
Good friend.
Yeah, great friend. Alumni of the China Accelerator Program.
Batch 5.
Batch 5. Your alumni.
Yeah.
Your alumnus. Yeah, awesome show. God, I mean, I know you got really turned on during that show. I mean, you loved it.
Oh,
it was a lot of things that you really like. Willie's the master of so many things, like in the content and virality and growth and
media strategies,
marketing strategies, and then the way he runs his team.
Yeah.
How he hires, how he hazes them.
Yeah.
And beats the crap out of them, and then
creates this culture about
somehow
being
they just
and
come back from
owning
more.
What you do.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It's amazing. I mean, so Neonan Media has been killing it. They were down and out maybe a couple of years ago, split from the co-founders. How they dealt with that, why that happened, and then they re-upped, came through China Accelerator, saying, you know what, we thought we could do it ourselves, but we actually could use a big brother and some help. We've learned our lessons, and
they went from just kind of starting off with MVPs about, you know, making men better, to eventually getting into what they are now is the largest fitness brand in China.
Yeah.
Number one in China, largest fitness brand from...
Fitness content. Yeah.
And they're branching out to so many other things, and they really believe that they can do the impossible.
Yes.
That's part of their formula.
That's what drives Willie.
Yeah. It's
awesome. Say it's impossible? All right. Well,
Willie's
screw you. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So premium content, premium video... Can it be done? Oh, is virality random?
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a
and
formula.
He's proven
he's
it.
He's got it.
Yeah, he's killing it.
And
so.
He shares it with us today, so we're really happy about that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, without further ado, let us get into the conversation. Hey, everybody. We're here. We're here with Wellington Cho, who goes by Willie. And here's a little background on Willie. And this is going to be quick. I'm doing the intro this time, not Ryan. So I'm going to make this really brief. Wolf of Wall Street, literally. And then gets a little tired of all the jazz of New York. Heads out to Taiwan. And if I may say this, Willie, basically... lost about $500,000 in a day, just through some really bad stock happenings over there. Decides, screw Taiwan, I'm going to come over to Shanghai. Comes over to Shanghai, says to his friends, hook me up with some of the biggest partiers in Shanghai. And then he meets Mike, his co-founder. Then he and Mike, with a couple other guys, launch Neonan. Neonan goes through some ups and downs. A couple co-founders, they have some difference of opinions, want to chase Neonan and take things in a different direction. So they split. Then I meet Willie and Mike at TechCrunch Shanghai a couple years ago. And they're talking to me. I'm talking to them. They're saying, yeah, we may have done some things wrong. Maybe took some money from some investors that we shouldn't have. And we could use some help. We want to do things the right way this time. You know, let's get involved. So then they join China Accelerator Batch 5.
Batch 5.
Batch 5, yes. Ryan was part of Batch 5 as well. And now today, Neonan is kicking ass. And if I'm not wrong, they are the number one online fitness resource in China. Is that right, Willie?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
That's awesome. Okay, and so you've been through a lot, to say the least. Yeah, so tell us, I mean, what was your time in New York like? I mean, what were you doing there?
New York was just a lot of fun, I guess.
Yeah, I bet.
It was just a lot of partying.
It's pretty hardcore lifestyle.
It is. It's a very, very... I mean, actually, no matter where I went at the start, it was kind of maintained that lifestyle, which was a lot of partying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the start, it was actually, a lot of, I started from day trading, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was a lot of, just up and downs and grinding. It was really, really hard. But in the end, it was pretty much my boss told me that as an Asian, it's probably not smart to keep on staying in New York.
Huh.
And that it would actually be smarter for me to go on a career path in Hong Kong.
What did the Asian thing have to do with it? Yeah. Just because it was New York?
It was just that from a financial perspective, it was going to be hard for me to probably end up as a director or a VP in a financial firm.
Mm. Wow. So he was pretty honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even want to ask. I mean, so I'm Canadian, so I'm kind of not really even get a lot of
super
that.
Polite.
What? Yeah, he's. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't even understand how that could possibly be. I mean,
I think it turned out really well because it's pretty much made me catch the whole China wave at the right time, or else I'd probably still be in the States right now.
So why'd you choose Taiwan right away as the first stop, not Hong Kong?
Actually, I did go to Hong Kong first.
You did Hong Kong?
I did go to Hong Kong first, and I was in Merrill Lynch, and also in that time, I did a lot of commodity trading. Mm. And then, when Merrill Lynch went down at 08, that's when I started like just doing stocks by myself, and then it was like I kind of knew about a lot of the deals that was going to go on.
Yeah.
And it's like really stupid stuff, like buying Apple at like 70 and selling it at like 130 and thought I was a genius.
Yeah.
like stuff like that. And then I got into inside trading with my boss then. And I mean, like there was like trades where we make like 50% in a day. And then there's just one trade that just crashed everything.
Yeah.
I went all in. Then I went back to Taiwan and I was actually a tech sector analyst. Huh. For a lot of the tech companies. So, I mean, I was pretty much just looking through all these tech stuff. And I really wanted to get into the game. I was actually a computer science major. And then, I actually switched. So, I mean, it was kind of always in me that I wanted to do, like, apps. I wanted to do these stuff. And when I got here and, you know, met Mike, and he has been doing stuff like this for contract work and a lot of other stuff. I just, you know, we wanted to get in and make something happen.
Yeah, Mike's got a bit of a different background. He, from what I remember, I mean, he's more the street smarts. Was always had some kind of scheme or company or something going on where he was making money. He was trading, he was importing, and then he was selling and he catching different waves and staying on top of trends and like eBay stuff and all this kind of stuff. So he was just really wrangling his way around.
He was doing pretty much a lot of stuff. He was just but then nothing kind of hit the spot in terms of it wasn't going to be able to be like $100 million company. It was like a boutique store or something on the side. And we both wanted something bigger. I mean, I love both tech and media simply because I feel like, you know, earning money is fun, but you know, like I can keep on earning money and banking and stuff, but if you really want to do something or create something that could be significantly better than someone else, like, you know, like the best car and the best hardware, they're probably like 20-30% better than someone else. You know, like both media, creating a movie, a good movie and a bad movie is like 100%, like 1,000% difference. And a good software product and a bad software product could be like 1,000%, 10,000% difference. It was kind of the factor that just a few people could differentiate that much of a different of value differentiation that got me into the game. I just felt like I wanted to create something special here. And then Yonan had a little bit of both. And it was really like the thing that I thought that we could start with. And honestly, Yonan is nothing from when we started. From when I met Todd, we just kept on pivoting and finding directions.
I can attest to that. I saw you guys pivot and keep on moving forward over and over and over again, from like idea creation phase to testing phase. You guys test so fast, like new ideas and things like that.
I mean, one thing we really believe in is just not accepting status quo. It's just if you're doing something last week and it's not great, and I see you doing something again this week, you're just doing the same mistakes again. And it just doesn't make sense at all. So you know, we try to push people out of their comfort zones, and you know, like that's just what we do a lot. But you know, someone, even if they do something that does work great, we let them, you know, be happy about it for a week or two. Then you gotta set new goals.
Yeah.
So it's always just constantly going at it.
Okay, let's go back to, you know, the creation of Neonan, because there was four of you. So and then you guys kind of split and went different ways. So, I mean, tell me a little bit about how you guys stumbled upon or came upon doing Neonan, you know, and how you guys all met and decided to kind of do this. And then, you know, the co-founder problem, you know, what happened there?
I think how we started wise was pretty, as you said, we were beasting around.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Beasting.
And then, it was crazy. It was like, you know, like we'd be out for
you guys were young. What were you, like 24, 25, 26?
It was like, you know, back then you take pride in going all out every day.
Yeah.
And just people kept coming at us and was like, why do you guys, you know, have great results and why, you know, some other guys just getting nothing, you know? Yeah.
Great results. Oh, we'll just let that go.
That's when we started. We were like, you know, it's a lot of the basic stuff, you know, from dressing, from talking, from, you know, and then we just thought that there was something there. Immediately, basically, we tested out the idea. I wrote a simple ebook. Mm-hmm. Mike started doing SEO online, PPC, mm-hmm. and it sold really, really well. So we're like, great.
Was this kind of how to party, how to pick up girls? Like,
it was a how to pick up girls, book. And then, I mean, it did really well. And then we're like, okay, that's step A done, but we're not really going to do this for a living.
Yeah.
That's horrendous. So, you know, we just kind of looked at ourselves like, what brand do we want to create? It's like, we don't want to create a brand where we teach guys how to get girls. We want to simply create a brand where the guys are so awesome. Yeah. Girls automatically enjoy these guys. So, you know, that's where we kind of just started out. And we're like, wow, there's, you know, just nothing that represents cool in China, like Virgin, mm-hmm. you know, like they just did everything mm-hmm. a little bit more awesome.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we inspired to in the start. So it was a very vague idea.
Yeah.
Really to in the start, like everybody was in unknown territories. We almost even took it as like a real life MBA in a way. And it was just, you know, we wanted to do it.
So what happened between the four of you?
So what happened, I guess it's a series of stuff. One is when you make a lot of money, there is tension. In the start, we got off on a really, really fast start. We had some outsourcing work, media related work, and it put us in a really good place. We could hire
financially,
we could hire a lot of people. We had just no worries, but it had nothing to do with what we were doing. Mm-hmm. So you see some of the employees, they're like very motivated in doing work that could get them paid, could get them bonus, mm-hmm. and the stuff which is the core of our company, our own media, they're half-assing it. And slowly the tension between the founders also happened. It was like, we're making so much money and we're burning so much money on the side doing this. We could just be earning a lot of money, period. And stuff like that. And then what pushed it over the board was we were trying to raise our Series A, and we were great friends in the start, and we just had equal shares, everybody, all four of us, which is a big red flag in terms of VC. They don't know who's calling the shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
So we decided.
Was the VC you were trying to raise focused in the West or in China, or where was the VCs?
It was a pretty global VC. It was a pretty global VC. But I would say anybody that just, you know, look at on paper and just like everybody is completely equal up to four people. Mm-hmm. You know, even like if you have like three founders, usually you have some guy that's like a little bit, like it's not the same proportion.
Yeah.
And we decided to kind of ask people to just kind of reform the whole thing. And I guess that kind of just blew the tension apart.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
Wasn't it also that it was a difference in philosophy of where, I guess, Neonan was going. I remember talking to you back in the beginning where, you know, those two guys, you know, they wanted to keep chasing the big easy money.
Yeah.
And you and Mike were somewhat over that and a little more resolved to building a legacy product and service or what, you know, content. You wanted to play it a little bit slower, build it, but have a bigger end game.
We thought we had really like a life type chance type of stuff.
Yeah.
In front of us. Like we just don't see how
the bigger picture.
How many times or how many chances in life you get to create something maybe that resembles to a China GQ, a China FHM, like something that could really last 100 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Baidu and Tencent wouldn't really be able to copy it because it's a brand. And, you know, we were willing to lose it all for that just to be able to chase it. And I guess that wasn't the same kind of resolution we all had.
Mm-hmm. So you guys split. And then, you know, when you came into the China Accelerator program, we were talking as if it was Maxim for China. And the focus was going to be threefold. It was going to be fashion and style. It was going to be dating. And then it was also going to be fitness.
Yeah.
Okay. The fashion, style, and dating has kind of been left to the wayside a little bit, and you focus. So tell us about how the pivots came, and what was the market telling you about why you needed to make those changes?
Yeah, because these changes that you guys pivoted to and did, you guys took these ideas instead of saying we want to be the GQ Maximum and then completely copy that, you guys reinvented everything for China.
Well, I mean, stage one was really just starting to create the brand and bring the same kind of structure, the same kind of tech solutions for medias these days to replicate it in China. Which vertical the tech could actually be used toward, or the ways of production media be used toward. So, you know, like Chinese people are different. So, you know, either in timing and stuff. And we just, you know, kind of listened to them. The fitness thing actually was, you know, like it's nothing that we can control. Honestly, it just came as a whole nation, you know, like we didn't know China government was going to say, we're going to fully support everybody to do fitness. And this is going to be the lead whole country policy. Like we didn't expect that, you know, but it happened that we were in a very, very good position to take advantage of it because we were already the leading sector, although it wasn't like our clear focus. We already had so many users that we were just like, whoa, this is a great chance. You know, let's jump on and expand on it. What we believe in reality is when you're trying to push your ultimate vision, something as big as a men's GQ or I say like a virgin brand, you still need to be really focused on how you're getting there. What I'm meaning is like Steve Jobs didn't just drop iPhone out and expect it to sell like hotcake.
Yeah.
He sold the idea of an iPod first.
Yeah.
He sold the idea of a music you need, something better. And he got iPod in everybody's pocket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then he's like, what if it was the same, but now it had phone functions.
Yeah. It was iTunes.
So it's really all of that. So we're thinking that fitness or what we're doing right now is our iPod. But once we get in ourselves into everybody, we'll slowly still branch out and do a kind of a total men optimization brand.
Men optimizing men. And anyway, I remember it was kind of interesting what you read in the market from saying, okay, well, first of all, style and fashion, Chinese men still not on board with it being a thing or something that they should focus on. They just, you weren't getting the same hit rate on the fashion stuff. And then on the dating, you realize just kind of with Chinese culture, they still didn't want to talk that openly about dating. It was still
Actually, the reality is they both work. You know, there were just great fashion websites. There's great dating. There's a dating website, a good friend of mine, that's actually about to go IPO next year in China. Mm-hmm. So it was just that what we were, the type of media that we were doing, it wasn't that great in terms of virality. Like fitness itself just has a way higher virality coefficient in terms of people love showing their results.
Yeah.
People love showing that they're working out, but people don't love showing that they're learning how to pick up girls or they need help in fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
People, especially guys, they just don't like to admit clearly that, you know, like I want to do this stuff. Yeah,
but you guys have like a really powerful message that I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that it resonated really well with the Chinese men.
Yeah.
you know, making them better overall.
I mean, in the end of the day, you still have to look at the stats. You know, when you're creating the same content and one does like 10 times better in stats, you still have to look at it and find, I guess, your aha moment in terms of what kind of content gets you the users the fastest. Once you do have the users, you can slowly still give them other content on fashion. But what's going to be your core driven growth?
Yeah.
And also the one thing we really looked at is, you know, as we grow, we're becoming a business, and it's not just about pure media creation. And what I mean by that is fitness in terms of a user wise is just way higher value.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that's into dating, he could be your customer until he finds a girlfriend.
Yeah.
He's done.
It's true. And then
he's done.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Most guys probably get married and even Chinese guys get married earlier, way earlier. And that's it.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't find much lifetime value.
Yeah. I was going to say customer lifetime value is
Users. But imagine a guy that's serious about fitness. You know, you're going in college, you start working out, you know, you start, you know, eating right.
Yeah, learning how to better yourself.
Yeah, and as you learn, maybe you come out, you start having to drink some protein powders. And once you start, you're doing that for life almost.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
For a long while. And the lifetime value of a user like that is just off the roof.
Yeah. Once you have the knowledge, then it never goes away and it always stays, you know, as a part of your lifestyle. All right, let's jump to break. And when we come back, I want to talk about a few things. One, very interesting how you guys measure the response to your content and the things that you change online, you know, visually or the text of content, and how you're constantly iterating. And then frankly, if it just doesn't work over the course of like 18 hours or something, then it's gone and replaced. And you guys are so maniacal about
obsessed with it.
Yeah. Just constantly measuring and changing and the graphic, change it. Okay. It's not working. Change it again. You know, something. And then how you form your team, the hazing process that you put your team through.
Oh, yeah.
And how you manage
your
team
culture.
You know, we want to talk about that as well. So we'll get to that right after the break. Hey everybody, Todd here. Just want to jump in and thank our sponsors very, very much for the support that they give to us and having our backs in trying to get this podcast going. And so far, so good. I think everybody's given us some really great feedback and it's done well. And in no small part to the backing of China Accelerator, you know, full transparency, I do work for China Accelerator. I am the program director. You know, everything that they have brought to the ecosystem that we have tried to bring to the ecosystem, I think has been very, very well received. And, you know, I think doing a lot to just promote and nurture the startup ecosystem, not just in Shanghai, but all around China and globally, as we get a lot of global companies coming through as well. And, you know, it's just, if you want to enter China, as we talk about, we even mentioned it in the show today, if you are thinking about coming to China, I think understanding how difficult China can be and joining forces with China Accelerator to launch your product in China is just something that we find is incredibly valuable and think it's very, very important. Now, we also want to thank PeopleSquared. We are a tenant, so to speak. We live and operate out of PeopleSquared, the Hero Space, which is their flagship operation and space here in the middle of Shanghai, right in downtown Jing'an. They think they have 9 spaces throughout Shanghai. I think they have over a dozen throughout China, one in Shenzhen, up in Beijing. They are the premier co-working space of China right now. And their dedication to community. I was talking with Jenny on the way out the door about all the new players that have come into the ecosystem here. And Jenny said, you know, we really got to hand it to the PeopleSquared people because they have their office in PeopleSquared. And she said that it's just their commitment to being so helpful to startups and just working for the startups is just yet to be matched by any other co-working space in China. So kudos to PeopleSquared, my friend Bob Jung, who's the founder. We've had him on the show before. So big thanks to China Accelerator and PeopleSquared for their sponsorship. Really appreciate it.
Hey guys, welcome back. So Willie, we kind of want to talk about your company culture. It's you guys have an amazing culture that you put your staff through. You kind of bring them on board, not just to the company, but to the idea and philosophy behind it. And it really has built something amazing. So, like, how do you do that, and why?
Well, in reality, it's just really inspired by the frat culture that we have in the States. In the start, we were like, so, you know, me and Mike's like, in the States, kind of everybody does like a makeover, or like almost in college, they go to frats, or they try to like really try to be cool,
yeah,
and stuff. And we're just like, you know, that concept is not alive in China. And in the start, we saw our users, and we had a big crowd in the college crowd, and we just inspired us to like, why? And in short, we are kind of building a frat-ish symbolism company in China, so we wanted to bring all that concept into work. So what we did was basically, there's like the same process, you know, you have a rush, people come in, we do a party, everybody get introduced to the party side of we see how social they are, we see what they are like after they're hammered
a little inebriated.
you put them under pressure, like you're trying to see, you know, if they can handle it.
I just feel like, you know, if we're all drunk, it saves us 2-3 months of time of meeting each other, and we know who each other really are from the get-go. And then right after that, they go through about 2 weeks of boot camp. So this is where
that the hazing,
yeah,
the pledging,
yeah, this is the, you know, the basically the hazing, the pledging. We get them to do an ridiculous amount of work. They're obligated to work on the weekends. They're obligated to work at least, I would say, close to 12-hour shifts. And this is where we just push them as hard as we can and see what they're made of. Do they break? Are they strong-willed enough? And once they're done with all that, they start getting like a big bro beside them to walk them through work. And the big bro eventually, after another 2 weeks, have to give them a stamp of approval. If they do become a stamp of approval, they become a big bro also. And then they could lead their next batch of littlings, and they get the whole initiation of Nonan. They get their official Nonan clothes, hoodies. You're allowed to use the cups.
It's like an initiation. They're allowed to use. They're allowed to drink.
Or else they're supposed to just help other people buy drinks, right?
Yeah.
And then so it's that whole process, and you know, guys enjoy it, especially if, you know, there's new guys coming into company. It's really different, and it's just faster than having to go through so much normal day-to-day training. They're just threw in the fire and see if they survive.
But you're bringing people into the messaging. So like, you know, what if you have this idea that you want to carry and making a better man, but you're onboarding your team. So when they're working on the project, you know, they've been put through fire to be better, to be part of
your tribe. Testing them that, are they here to work or are they here to start something? Because that's just two complete different mentalities.
I understand what you mean.
If they're here to work and get paid, they're just always going to work to get paid. They're just going to, their whole mindset is, why do I have to do this? Why do I just do enough to the standard of my getting paid? But we don't want them to be in that concept. You know, we want to just from day one break them and test them that, you know, nothing makes sense here. The amount of work you're doing doesn't make sense. The whole everything is just not to your norm. Under the circumstances, will you still stay? Will you still give it your all? And that's what we look at. That's really what we look at.
What about after the onboarding, as far as the retention? I mean, how do you keep them staying for a year, 2 years more?
I think we're gonna do it slowly, differently, but there's a few things. A, they know our culture is significantly different than most local companies. We don't have significant work hours. Everything is done through like Trello, Tower. But at the same time, everything is transparent. Like everything you do, when you start, when you end, you use Trello. So there's a timestamp on everything. You can work at 11 p.m. and still show off. You can start late and people will know. It's just like everything is transparent, but everything is self-motivated. That's something that I really enjoy. The second thing is keeping the quality of the whole working environment there. For people that are smart, there's nothing that beats working with smart people. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing that beats working with smart people. If you have someone that's really not smart in the team, like a few, it gets everybody irritated. Mm-hmm. And complaints. When everybody is like egoless and smart, that's sometimes the biggest treasure. That's sometimes why people just don't leave. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, well, like, I'm not going to find a team like this elsewhere. And this last part, I think we're going to slowly change it up. But in the start, when you're a startup, what we do is daily, even weekly, promotions. So it's kind of like I only play League of Legends. Mm-hmm. You know, everything you do, you get instant feedback.
Feedback.
And then you kind of know what you have to accomplish to get that next raise.
Yeah.
Everybody knows. Like, if you just ask them, they know the exact, like, I need to hit this target distance and I will get immediately a raise. Every day, my WeChat content, if I hit a certain number, this day I get a bonus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has to be fast because, you know, there's no point of motivating them over half a year or a year because they're smart guys. They see if your company is not growing that fast, mm-hmm. they're still going to bounce at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you want to give them the full support of growing as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that. So they've got a salary that's locked in. It's day to day, month to month. That's always there. But if they're coming in every day saying, you know, I hit these certain goals today, you know, I've got some extra money, I'm going to get a bonus, I'm going to get an extra day off, I'm going to get something. Yeah. You know, you've gamified, you know, employment.
Yeah. And that's the speed you want your startup company to be working at anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, like I'm down to pay for for certain stats.
Yeah, you guys are obsessed with
speed. I love it. You take, you know, this is what brings in, you know, this is the bread maker. This is what makes us cash. So, you know, if you guys are doing all of this every day, yeah, we're going to share it with you because you hit these goals. Yeah, you get a bonus because this is how much money that's probably going to make us. Yeah. And this is going to be your share.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah. Transparency. All right, let's talk about content. You know, it's an online, it's a website, it's a platform. And you guys, like I said, are pretty maniacal about your content. What's the routine here? You know, you're driving up some content, you know, there's the title, there's the graphic, and then there's the content itself. And you're measuring everything all the time. Tell us about that.
So, I mean, I'm the type of guy, like, I love doing what people think is impossible. Mm-hmm. It's just what drives me. Mm-hmm. So when I started to get into the game of creating content, there's just two things that were deemed impossible that I really wanted to tackle at. Mm-hmm. And those two things basically to me were premium content is unscalable.
Mm.
And the second thing is virality is random.
Mm. Hmm.
I believe virality can be identified. And I believe that premium content can be scaled. Mm-hmm. And in short, that's what Nona Media as a whole media, that's why we sometimes align ourselves with to Vox Media in the States, is we're taking the tech side of stuff. We're analyzing these viral patterns. We're analyzing the type of content, the comic strips, the voice, whatever growth hacking ways to create content that can be extremely, extremely viral. You know, there's this guy in the States. What he does is he has a bot creating, just picking up all these iPhone messages, like that are, you know, like those like drunk messages I sent last night.
Yeah.
And then the bot automatically creates content, top 10s. So it's top 10 random adjective iPhone messages.
Hmm.
And the website just keeps pumping them out every 5 seconds. And he gets ridiculous traffic, and he gets ridiculous virality also. It's more of the core. That's why we really believe in the end of the day, when one day we do have a great inside tech identification of what's viraling, what's going on viraling, mm-hmm. right away, and you could do more stuff on it. That's when our core tech content product is really done. That's just why we mean that fitness is just one vertical that we're testing this theory in. Once this is done, we could be using it in a lot of media spaces and a lot of commerce verticals. And the second thing is video producing. People always thought video production is expensive, it's premium, it's top of the line in terms of content, and it's unscalable. And I wanted to prove that wrong. So, you know, Nona has been spending a lot of time and testing short form films and putting short form films online and testing as a result and making short form films into long form once it gets great results and then slowly growing different media sectors. What we want to show is that you can actually plan and scale multiple premium video contents. And once we get those two things done, that's when we believe we're going to have a strong footing in the game.
You guys rebuilt your office actually to shoot video right inside.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's bringing the YouTube model of production. What we call it is video R&D. Because before, the business model is really you spend a bunch of money, you create something, and then you hope it works, and then people show it, and they like it or not. Now we're doing like 20, 30-second minute films, two-minute films.
Yeah,
they like it. Okay, we're going to make a five-minute one now. They like it. We're going to make a 10-minute one now.
You're doing like an MVP of each video.
We're bringing the whole agile tech process into video creation. That's exactly what we're doing.
And it's doing awesome in China.
Nobody else is.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you're like, okay, I'm going to write a book, but it's going to take me a year to write this book or something. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create the table of contents and the preface, and I'm going to sell that. And then people are going to pre-buy, and then that's going to give me the cash to actually produce the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, here, you know, give me $20 for here's the table of contents, here's the preface. If you like what the book might be about, here's $20. 1,000 people give him $20. He's got $20,000. Boom. He's writing a book, and he's already validated that people want it, and he's already actually made money from it, and he hasn't even written it yet. So that's I just think that's a great way to do it. All right, let's talk a little bit about marketing.
Actually,
now,
I'm going to fall back a bit and kind of on the virality content part. Just, I guess, like, share a little bit more in terms of content creation. I don't think really got into that.
Thank you.
People always go into the dilemma of quantity versus quality. That's usually the big dilemma in terms of starting a content marketing. Do I want mass quantity? Do I want extreme quality? And the answer that we as Nonan gave is both. The answer is curation. So you're curating quality content at quality. And in today's day of time, users really don't care who makes the content. They only care who made them feel this way. So what you see more and more is the fact of identifying things that are going viral at an early stage is way more important than being able to create viral content. And you put it one step further. Imagine you see a super viral cat video and you decided to dub over it. What you're doing is actually making the video worse. But this dubbed worse video is still probably going to go more viral than any content you create yourself.
Yeah, true.
Because it has all the virality factors in it already. So what we're doing is really having massive identifying early trends of virality, finding a lot of these viral content, and then remixing them, reusing them to create original content. And that for us has been one of the core secret sauce in terms of content creation and in terms of how to do content marketing cheap.
Do you splice that at all based on I mean, can you even start separating that into geography, gender, demographic, things like that, and then medium of delivery for content?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to focus on men, but slowly we want to do different geographics for sure. And that's why we really think, I mean, when do 8x8s and stuff, I really think this method of creating content is actually suitable for everything, for every vertical. Like, I'm confident that it will work for a lot of verticals. It's just the concept of making the content is like very different.
Yeah, like you said, agile media.
Yeah.
Yeah, super agile media. Okay, great. It's nice to actually have a guest sometimes lead us, knowing what the goal of China Startup Pulse is, you know, to actually deliver great content and learning for people who are new to entrepreneurship or are entrepreneurs looking to come to China to understand more about that. So thank you for just kind of stepping in and saying, whoa, I want to continue on this because
that was really valuable.
That's cool. So now to the marketing side. You know, for those of you, we might mention the word hongbao, and a hongbao is, you know, a red envelope. And generally, this is something you give to somebody as a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, a few years ago,
it's a China thing.
And this is where you would give somebody a nice red envelope. Maybe it was the teacher of your children at school.
Oh, yeah.
So you would give them a hongbao in China so that the teacher would then sit them at the front of the class and ask more questions to them about what was going on to engage your student. Whereas parents who weren't giving the hongbao to the teachers, somehow their kids got put at the back of the class and weren't getting as much of attention. So, you know, so this is kind of a way to get favor. And I know, Willie, you've been very open about, you know, hey, listen, I didn't make the rules. I'm just playing the game. And, you know, this was something that... you know, that you use, but you also said that things are changing. So start with, you know,
I mean, I'll start with how we got into this. Yeah. I mean, as a startup, your marketing budget is very limited.
Yeah.
And in China, what you see is actually a lot of these, even the biggest sites, like what they say closest to YouTube, what Youku and iQIYI, they're all manually driven. They're all not automated. And that's where, I mean, if there's a guy that's behind it, and he's probably not very well paid. He's actually just a junior guy updating it every day.
Yeah.
You can definitely work with them.
Yeah.
Or it could be something very simple. It could be like whatever you make me, I give you a kickback.
Yeah.
It could be an annual hongbao. But sometimes having key figures in these places, like you could know someone that works in Weibo or Tencent. Directly, and they could give you a lot of little bonuses, and that would be way better than you paying some KOL on a monthly basis. But the amount adds up to about the same.
Yeah.
So you know that's how we really started, and it's a practice in China. You know, like people pretty much can pay for everything. A lot of these workers, they even just set up their own Taobao shops.
Really?
Yeah.
You can find
these guys.
Taobao has everything. Exactly. I'm probably on there. I don't even know it.
You know, there's just guys in there be like, you know, I can do this for you. Don't question where I'm from. But you know, if you could do this, there's only one reason you can do it.
Yeah. You're sitting inside the, the Youku or the Tudou office, and you're the guy that's placing those videos on the front page and the homepage on the sidebar of the homepage. Yeah. And that's a huge difference, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where it came from. It's also, I guess, like, as you said, it's a China culture. You know, people, especially, if, say, it's Chinese New Year's, and you give them a big gift or something, it's completely normal almost.
Yeah, no, that's super cultural. That's part of the culture to give a gift. Like, you give your, you know, people that are around, your building managers, your IE. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this happens to you guys, but ever since I was partying, even, like, in Taiwan, I pay the bouncers. Every year, just so they remember me, and or something happens, like I that's just, you know, it's part of, you know, to feel safe.
Yeah I started getting into that you know, even back in Vancouver and things. You become friends with the bouncer, the doorman, and they would generally kind of let you in, you know, ahead. You could cut the line, but
like,
then you start paying them, you know. It's like, you know, I don't know, whatever, there's five of us, you know, here's a couple $100, boom.
I mean, being even smarter about it is just doing it in Chinese New Year's. You give them one big one and they remember you for the whole year.
Yeah, for the whole year.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you pay your guards downstairs.
Chinese New Year's is coming up, guys. Who wants me to remember you?
Yeah. What's your WeChat again? Just send it over as a WeTransfer.
I don't know.
That's true.
But people are trying to, just these few years, you know, people are growing a new moral conscious, I guess.
Yeah.
The whole China in general, you can see like a lot of these privacies, pirating and everything is like getting cleared out pretty fast. So yeah, I think it's actually harder right now. Less and less people are doing it.
Yeah. But, yeah, the end of the, I mean, the crackdown on corruption.
At the end of the day, it's just being social.
Yeah.
It's just being street smart.
Yeah. And things are changing though, right? Things are getting more and more transparent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Willie, thanks so much for dropping by. What's up next for Neonan? I know you guys might get into some physical product, women's line. You know, what's up?
So, you know, we've been successful in becoming the trendsetter and leaders in men's fitness. Mm-hmm. And the fitness sector actually this year has been a little bit overcrowded. Mm. And we want to branch out and do more. And what we really have targeted next is the sports sector. Mm-hmm. So we're going to drive the way we did with fitness, which is one kind of sport.
Yep.
Into different sports verticals and replicating the model into different basketball, tennis, soccer, MMA, track and field, mm-hmm. how to run faster, how to jump higher, stuff like that. So that's immediately next where we're heading toward. And, you know, sport is a big industry.
Yeah, that's specific awesome. Trainings, right, dedicated to particular sports that are actually hot in China. Or
yeah,
Asia.
I mean, the boot camps in China, like soccer training, basketball, they're doing really, really well.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that content online.
Yeah, right. It's true.
Yeah, that is very true. But I know like NBA and NFL are, you know, they're all trying to have much bigger presence in China now.
Yeah, but there's nobody teaching them how you could possibly get NPA level training.
Yeah. No, big offline, you know, showbiz events with some stars showing up and signing autographs and things like that. And maybe you get to run and catch a ball or something. But
yeah, but where's the persistence of that offline event? You know, you gotta push it online.
Well, there's no actual learning from it is the problem. It's not, there's no training.
Yeah,
you
know, so
it's just a...
Yeah, exactly. Willie, how do people get in touch with you?
So neonan.com.
Yeah.
neonan.com.
.com, yeah.
That's the website. Go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's beautiful. Go contact us. Find my contacts right there or my email or, you know, that's probably an easy way.
Yeah. WeChat account. You guys have an official account?
Yeah. Our WeChat account, just neonanwang, English neonan01.
Neonan01.
Yeah. All right.
Awesome. Yeah, you can get it all there. Anyway, awesome. Thanks very much for coming out. Really appreciate it. Great, great, great learnings. And hope everybody listening.
Yeah, it's a great conversation as well. And also just you know, today's talk about so much history is one last shout out. Like, we wouldn't even be here if Todd didn't pick us up from the trash.
Yeah.
No way.
He's blushing.
I was blessed to get you guys in. You guys rock Batch 5. And
yeah, you guys are rock
stars. You guys
stars.
Have killed it. It's all you guys. You know, I mean, it's just nothing to do with us. But thanks, man. You guys have made us proud. Really appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, listeners. And hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Hi, before we go, I have one favor to ask of you guys. I'm here with Chi Leo, our producer, and what do we want, Chi?
Hi, guys. Please write to us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, because we really want to get your voice on the air. We will ask our next guest the questions that you write us. And who doesn't have any questions about China and startups, Chi?
Yeah, of course we do. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so... give us a ping at team@chinastartuppulse.com.